A growing prison population in Idaho is raising many questions about why this number keeps growing. Currently, the Gem State has more than 8,600 prison inmates, and prison officials expect that number to increase to more than 10,000 in just the next 4 years. So based on that projection, the state needs about 2,400 more prison beds. Prison officials are now looking at building a new prison and expanding several others at a cost of more than $500 million. The state started the Criminal Justice Reinvestment Project about 4 years ago, which brought together judges, attorneys, correction officials, substance abuse workers, and others to try and find ways to reduce Idaho's prison population. And joining me in studio today to talk more about this is Idaho Department of Correction Director Henry Utensio. Welcome to the program, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Henry, there was a meeting Monday. It's the Criminal Justice Reinvestment Oversight Committee, and this is legislators, lawmakers. Mm-hmm. Also, prison officials were there. They had a meeting on Monday, and a big part of the discussion was reducing time behind bars for certain people convicted of felonies, and we're talking mainly about certain drug convictions. Talk to me about what you think that would do for our prison population.
Sure. So, I attended that meeting on Monday. That's the JRI, Legislative Oversight Committee. It's a committee that was formed about 4 years ago, as you say, of state legislators to have oversight of the justice reinvestment process in the state of Idaho. I think that may have been the fourth meeting in calendar year 2018 of that group. So I think they definitely recognize our inmate population is increasing, and they're looking at ways to maybe help curb that growth, if you will, going forward. But, to answer your question, when we look at the makeup of our inmate population, we see that we have a number of inmates serving time for nonviolent crimes. I think Justice Reinvestment's focus was to serve or reserve that critical, very expensive prison bed for violent offenders and people that we should be afraid of, maybe not a nonviolent offender. I will say this, there's certainly nonviolent people in there for nonviolent crime who are violent, who have had many opportunities at probation or parole supervision, but just kind of worked their way into failing probation in the community and worked their way into a prison sentence at the end of the day. So kind of got to parse those folks out and make sure we're talking about the right people who, in terms of when we talk about a low risk offender or a nonviolent offender, they're not all quite the same. You just can't look at a crime title when you look at that.
So you have to look at the individual, frankly.
Exactly.
And you've basically grown up in the system. And what I mean by that is you have been with the Department of Correction for 20 plus years. And you started, parole officer?
Correct. I started with the Department of Correction just about 28 years ago. I started as a probation and parole officer in our system. I feel like I've grown up in our system. I worked a few different positions in what we call community corrections and then moved my way over to our prison system as a deputy warden at ISCI. At that time, ISCI was our state's largest facility, and I was deputy warden there for, 3 or 4 years. As well.
And from seeing this population for almost three decades, what changes have you seen within the system, A, that are good, but A, that still need to be looked at?
I think over the course of that time, I think our agency, as we've grown up, if you will, I think we've gotten a little bit smarter, certainly more progressive in how we manage our populations, both in the community and in our prisons, our prison population. We have for years, we use a classification instrument, so we're able to get in there and identify who we have in our system through a classification process. And from there, we look at where it's best to house them at the lowest possible restriction level as well. That's just a good way to manage our population and manage our very valuable resources. We have a variety of programs that we offer our inmate population. Just maybe 2 years ago, we invited the Council of State Governments to come into our system look at all the programming that we're providing and tell us how are we doing? Are these the appropriate programs?
Mm-hmm. And what was the answer?
The answer was a little bit eye-opening for us, quite frankly. You know, we learned that some of our programs that we thought were evidence-based were no longer evidence-based. And from that report and from those findings, we removed all of our non-evidence-based practices, probably about 12 different programs that we were operating, and introduced what we call five core programs, and we're using those today. We've trained all of our staff. We have about 52 staff who are trained as trainers, so they deliver the curriculum and certify our new employees to deliver that curriculum as well. So I feel like we're moving in the right direction in terms of being smarter with our programming and those types of things. And everything's assessment-based as well.
But yet, the prison population, as you're quoted as saying, is skyrocketing right now. Why do you think that is?
It is. You know, it is. That is a term I use. It is skyrocketing. Every day, I start my day looking at our inmate count to see what our number is today. And it moves dramatically from week to week, from day to day, sometimes 30 people.
Yeah, so what was it today?
Today it was 8,600, and I believe 32 was the number. Last week it was 8,675. So we dropped a little bit, you know, and we'll see how long that lasts. We've had that before in the last couple of months. So what's driving that? I think there's a few things happening in Idaho. First off, we all recognize that Idaho is one of the fastest, if not the fastest growing state in the country. The Boise Valley is one of the biggest growing areas for sure. So you have an influx of people coming into our system, into our state. Idaho is not immune to the opioid crisis that everyone in the country is facing. And we've seen a large number of probationers, parolees, fall victim to opioids, to heroin. So I think that's a big impact as well. And frankly, I think crime is up in our area as well. When I talk to local prosecutors, they talk about criminal filings at the felony level. So new felony filings having increased by 60% over the last 2 or 3 years. So all of those people come to my agency, either on probation, our rider program, or as a term inmate. So we see that certainly increasing. Our community correction population, those folks that we supervise, both probationers and parolees, we see increasing. We're about ready to crest 16,000 people in the community.
And this is people on probation?
On probation or parole.
Okay.
Most of them are probation. We have about 4,000 parolees in our state today, and the rest are probationers. So that number is growing as well. And we just see that. You know, that just stretching our resources at the seams, quite frankly.
I'm speaking with Henry Utencio, director of the Idaho Department of Corrections, talking about our corrections reform, but as well as our skyrocketing prison population. So with those three main factors that you just stated, what do you think should be done then or can be done to change this? Because we've also taken prisoners out of state. I mean, there are prisoners being housed in Texas. There are prisoners being housed in county jails here, which then the state pays the county jails.
That's correct.
Because you don't have the room. Hence also why there's a proposal on the table for this $500 million expansion. But at some point, when do you stop expanding and we start trying to figure out how do we fix this?
Exactly. And I think that's where we're at today. You mentioned the Justice Reinvestment Legislative Oversight Committee. I think they're very interested in looking at our system, what's causing growth. They've talked about looking at certain felonies that maybe could be misdemeanors. They've looked at what other states are doing. I think Idaho is one of 39 justice reinvestment states. And when you look at the progress that we've made, and you compare what we've done from a JRI perspective to what other states have done who have had more success than us, you know, they've looked at the back end like we have, corrections and the parole commission. I think we've done a lot of the things that we're required to do through justice reinvestment in that legislation. But those other states who've been more successful have looked at the front end, looking at felonies that could be misdemeanors, sentencing structure, those types of things.
So when you say front end, it's that type of thing?
Yeah, the sentencing process, pretrial release, more community-based resources for treatment from a drug and alcohol perspective or a mental health perspective, those types of things. I think those states have been more successful in that area. And those are the discussions that are happening today in those in that legislative oversight committee. So that group has a tough mm-hmm. job ahead of them to identify what the proper changes are.
So I know you've spent a lot of time speaking with our lawmakers about this. What about prosecutors? What about public defenders, you know, judges? When you've had conversations with them, how do they feel about this? You know, because there's this idea that, well, if you don't make something a felony and it's a misdemeanor, which is, a lower crime, I mean, misdemeanors, you might go to jail. You're not going to go to prison. How are they with that? And why I ask that is there's this idea that, well, then they'll just keep committing these crimes over and over and over
right.
again if all they get is a slap on the wrist.
Right. So that going back to 2013 when justice reinvestment was introduced in Idaho, and I think you said this earlier, we had prosecutors on that team. Mm-hmm. We had chiefs of police, sheriffs, all
looking. Public defenders
public
as
defenders,
well. Right.
The courts were represented. My department was represented. I believe we had some victims advocates mm-hmm. in there as well. We looked at the entire system, and our prosecutors, rightly so, are concerned about public safety at the end of the day. That's the comments that they reiterate is, you know, what does this do to public safety? And quite frankly, that's my concern as well as the director of corrections. Mm-hmm. You know, we have 16,000 people that we supervise. And we're part of that criminal justice network. We're part of the public safety net in our state. So you have to go through those changes pretty methodically and make sure we're not doing things that are going to hurt the great living environments that mm-hmm. we have in the state of Idaho.
Well, frankly, one of the reasons why so many people are moving here is because we are a safer community mm-hmm. than most. So that plays a part in it.
Right. And I think the narrative or one of the questions is, are we a safer community because we have a higher incarceration rate? There's a lot of folks who believe that. Or the question is, can we reduce that prison population and still maintain that great safety rate mm-hmm. that we have today? I think there's the balance. There's the, you know, if you can find that magic balance, we've struck gold
right.
in Idaho, right?
Yeah, we can sell that, right?
We can sell that, yeah. Well,
so what about this idea, though, that when you have growth, we get people that come in here and, you know, come to Idaho and they've got a good job and they've, you know, got money, all of these things, and they can just move their lives. That's not always the people that move somewhere,
right.
though, too. And as you said, does that play a factor in those prison numbers potentially going up? I mean, you cannot blame it all, though, on people are moving here and they're bad people and so they're getting
right.
arrested. That's
yeah,
not true.
That's not all of it, without a doubt. And, you know, there's great people moving to Idaho and there's people moving to Idaho to take advantage of our great environments and safety, but they have some nefarious goals in mind as well. So we certainly recognize those folks. I think there was a pretty big drug arrest just a couple of days ago mm-hmm. As well. You know, I can't remember the poundage of methamphetamine
that was found, right?
And so, man, those things are scary. If you're a citizen of Idaho and you like to enjoy recreating on the Greenbelt and the Boise River, you want to know that the person next to you is not a criminal. And so I think there's the struggle is how do we strike that balance and put the right people mm-hmm. in prison for the right amount of time, the right people on probation for the right amount of time, give them to us, let us supervise them, get them to programming, and then get them out of our system so they can move on mm-hmm. with their lives.
And I think you said something interesting earlier in our conversation about you can't just look at the crime,
right.
what they have been
yeah.
convicted of. Because as you said, some people are bad people even though it's not considered a
right.
horrible offense.
Exactly.
Right? It's
yeah.
not a violent offense. There are other people, though, on the flip side, that maybe the crime seems to be worse, but based on things like evaluations and,
right.
and going through the court system, they may not be as big of a threat
right.
to society.
Yeah.
So should you know, prosecutors, public defenders, judges, should they have more say in this? Because we had Representative Melissa Wintrow on earlier mm-hmm. this week, and one of the things that she talked about was it's not just federal mandatory minimums. It's state mandatory minimums.
Right.
You have to do that.
Right.
How does that all play into this?
Yeah. You know, I like to say that we supervise and manage people, not crimes, in our system. And it goes to that assessment process. In Idaho, part of the pre-sentence investigation process is a battery of assessments. We try to paint that picture for the sentencing judge, what their risk to the community is, what their areas of their higher risk are on that scale. A good substance abuse evaluation, a mental health evaluation, so that judge knows who he's looking at and who he's about to sentence. I think that's a great system for us. But when you come to certain crimes in Idaho, drugs that hit that mandatory minimum threshold, the judge has no discretion, and maybe easing that back a little bit. They're required by law to give that mandatory minimum portion. And, you know, we've heard judges say, man, I wish I didn't have to do that to this person. I think he got caught up with the wrong group, those types of things. But at the end of the day, they're required by mm-hmm. by statute to sentence them to that minimum portion. So you have to wonder, are we getting the right people every single time right. on the mandatory minimums as well?
We are continuing our conversation with the director, Idaho Department of Corrections Director Henry Utencio. We have been talking about the criminal justice system and reforming it, as well as this proposal for a $500 million expansion at the state prison, as well as other facilities. And I appreciate you staying with us to talk little bit more about this. Let's talk about this $500 million expansion, because what some people may not realize is this also addresses inmates with special needs, Correct. Like allocating certain prison beds, right. things like that to them. Why is there a necessity for something like that?
Sure. So in our proposal for more prison beds in Idaho, we're proposing, and our Board of Correction approved our proposal, of nearly 2,100 different inmate beds in our system, everywhere from a community work release center. You know, we'd like to place one in northern Idaho. We have four of those today. We were funded to build a fifth one this past session in Twin Falls. We think those reentry beds are the best beds we can have. It's for that low-risk offender working himself back into the community. It's a chance for employment, those opportunities. You know, expanding our work camp in St. Anthony, Idaho. We're looking at purchasing a school there as well, and maybe remodeling that and turning that into a housing unit for our existing facility up there. Those folks are heavily involved in the community, doing a variety of different work out there. We have a private facility here in Boise run by MTC, the Management Training Corporation out of Utah. We call it the CAP program. You were looking to maybe double the footprint of that facility, thereby doubling the population as well. We have a good record with MTC. They do a good job for the state of Idaho. But our bigger request is what you're getting to is a 1,500-bed prison. We have not identified where that would be. We don't know, mm-hmm. and we haven't done that kind of work yet. But what we're finding in our system is, you know, our prison system takes all comers. If you have a mental health problem and you commit a felony crime, you're coming to the state prison complex here in Boise. People who are sick and need maybe major medical care, but they've committed a crime.
We're taking care of them.
So today, you know, as we look at our system, we find that we just don't have the appropriate, adequate space for our medical needs. So inmates who have a medical issue that requires, you know, long-term care, we don't have the ability to properly manage those folks. I think today the number is we have 29 medical beds in our prison for 7,500 male inmates. Just not enough. So we rely on the community hospitals to help us in that regard. Those folks are receiving medical care. We think we can do a better job in a different facility. We see our mental health population beginning to increase as well. Probably mirrors what's going on in the community. We're mm-hmm. getting a sicker person mm-hmm. in our system.
Well, and then what about like addiction and things like that? Because you have to have numerous people coming into your system that have addiction issues.
Correct. You know, and the way our system works in Idaho, those addiction issues, when they go through the the words escape me now, the withdrawal process mm-hmm. of addiction, that typically happens in a county jail. By the time they go through the sentencing process and get to us, you know, they've gone through that withdrawal process. So now we're just trying to treat them, give them education and understanding about what drugs and alcohol do to them as an individual in our communities. But yeah, so we have a number of people that require either medical treatment, mental health treatment, or addiction treatment before we can release them onto parole. So a huge pool for us. Our new prison that we're proposing would have a new reception diagnostic unit. It would have a medical portion to that, so more medical beds and a more mental health beds for us as well.
So it sounds like this is something that in a lot of ways is moving the criminal justice system forward, possibly in a better way. And why I say that is because if you were looking at diagnosing someone and saying, okay, this person maybe has PTSD or this person has an opioid addiction and they can't be placed in the general population, we need to put them X and then get them certain services.
Right.
By doing so, is the goal to be able to rehabilitate them?
Absolutely. We have to recognize that in the Idaho system, 98% of our inmate population will return to our communities, either on parole or they top out their sentence. And so ask yourself, who do you want to live by? I know who I want to live by. And that's our job, is to get them ready for parole supervision, get them ready to top out of the system through the different treatment programs. You know, some of those folks don't want to be involved. They don't want to be involved in treatment. They want to do their time and top out their sentence. You know, we try to encourage them as best we can not to go down that route. Let us help you through programming, through proper supervision. But at the end of the day, they're getting out. So I think it's incumbent upon us to have a strong correctional system that's taking care of all of the needs, again, from that medical, that mental health, the addiction process, anger management issues, those types of things. We need to address all of those before we say, hey, this guy's ready for the community. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that takes a long time. And maybe we backtrack a little bit and start over with some of those folks as well. It's a tough task.
I have a question from a listener, Steve. He says, what is the reoffender rate, or as call it recidivism?
Recidivism rate, yeah. So in Idaho, our current recidivism rate is just around 32%. So what that means in our system is 32% of those folks who've gone through our system come back to us within a three-year period. They either come back as a probationer or to a new term sentence. So 68% of our folks are staying out there being successful.
And how does that stack up to other states? Are we on a low end, a high end? Where are we at with that?
Yeah, that's a difficult question to answer, quite honestly. Every state has a little bit different definition of recidivism. I've seen some as high as 50 and 60%, but they measure it a little bit differently. I think that 32%, from my perspective, is too high. We want to see a better success rate. But it's better than a lot of other states. But again, the definitions and how they measure are a little bit different.
I really want to thank you for coming in today and talking about this. I think it's an important conversation to be having. Henry Utencio is the director of Idaho's Department of Corrections. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure we will have you on again talking about this.